Hello and welcome to the SEO SAS podcast, where your host is myself, Sarah McDowell, SEO content executive at Holland & Barrett. Why are we called SEO SAS? Well, we like to think of ourselves as your special answering service when it comes to SEO. So each week we will delve into a particular SEO topic and I will invite a guest to come and discuss that topic, where we will discuss experiences, the guests will share their knowledge. And basically, it's just about having a general good chit chat about that topic. And I don't know, really, just getting better at, altogether, getting better at SEO. Now, this week, I have the absolute pleasure of chatting to Laura Hampton, who is the head of digital PR at Impression Digital Marketing Agency, where she likes to celebrate creative campaigns, impactful strategies, and, in her words, bloody great work. And also, in her spare time, she jumps out of planes. So welcome to the show, Laura.
Hi, Sarah. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for agreeing to spend your weekend with me and recording an episode. How are we doing?
Of course, I'm very good, thank you. Of course, I've got very busy weekends at the moment, so I had to squeeze you into a jam-packed schedule. It's lovely to spend some time with you. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Oh, lovely, lovely. I tell you what, I think it's going to be a shock to us all when normal life resumes. I feel like that's it's there. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. With the plan and the vaccines. But yeah, I do feel that I know that I'm going to be overwhelmed, especially I don't know, being around people and having a busy life again. I don't know how I'm going to survive.
Well, I set an alarm this morning just to make sure, even though we didn't start recording until 10 a.m., I thought I'd best set an alarm because I haven't set one in about a year now. And I thought, I thought I should probably do it just in case. And of course, I woke up at 7 a.m. anyway, so it was absolutely fine. But I think that'll be the shock for me, is when I have to actually set an alarm and stick to a schedule. I think that's going to be really weird.
Yes. I don't know about you, but whenever I leave the house at the moment, it takes me ages because I'm triple checking everything because I'm not so used to leaving a house, especially if I'm the last person to leave the house. I check about 3 times that I've turned the oven off. I haven't even used the oven sometimes, but I have to check that. I don't know if you're the same.
I haven't had that issue, but I think something else I'm going to struggle with is that for all of my meetings that I currently have with work, even though they're all on video, I tend to be wearing some form of crazy leggings on the bottom, and then I'll try and look a bit more business professional on the top. So I'm really worried that my first day back in the office, I'm going to wear that exact same attire and it's not going to be quite appropriate.
I mean, I really want to see this attire. Sounds fabulous. You're all professional from the top down, and then you've got crazy. I'm for that.
Yeah, pro on the top, party on the bottom.
That's awesome. Right, Laura. With each of our guests, we like to do a quick, fun, quick fire round question. Does that make sense? As I was saying that, I was like, am I getting my words muddled? No, basically, I've got a few quick fire round questions, which are just a bit of fun. And if you could just clear your mind and answer with the first thing that comes to your head. Are you ready?
Oh, gosh. Yep. Let's do it.
Okay, question number one. When was the last time you jumped out of a plane?
It was December 2020 when there was the break that allowed us to do so.
Awesome. If you could ban one food, what would it be and why?
Oh, probably mackerel. And the reason that I say that is there used to be a guy who worked at Impression who would cook his lunchtime mackerel in the microwave and the smell would drift through the office. And I think it's put me off for life.
I mean, I do not blame you.
It's not okay.
It's not okay. There's an etiquette, isn't there, in the office about not having too smelly food.
Exactly.
Question number three. If you could drink anything right now, what would you choose?
I've got a really nice hot chocolate in my kitchen, which my friend sent to me, which is a vegan hot chocolate. I haven't been able to have hot chocolate since we turned vegan a couple of years ago, and she found me this one, and it's so, so nice. So, yeah, I might go and grab one of those after this.
Ah, lovely. I would say that I was 90% vegan.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, I know that's doesn't make much sense. But yeah, I'm trying. I'm basically trying to transition into vegan. So I definitely don't eat meat or fish.
Mm-hmm.
But on the odd occasion, I do have something with dairy, but I'm trying to cut that out.
Fair enough.
right. I think I know this answer because we were chatting before. Do you prefer dogs or cats?
Cats, definitely cats.
Why?
Why? Because I like their independence. I typically, in non-lockdown times, I will spend most of my weekends at the airfield, jumping out of planes. Most of my evenings I'll spend at the indoor wind tunnel doing training. So if I had a dog that really needed my time all the time, I think that would be quite unfair. Whereas cats, they're there for the love and the fussing when I'm around and we can spend time together. But on the whole, I just like their independence. So yes. Yeah, we were chatting, weren't we? Because we've brought a rescue kitten into our home yesterday. And she's currently sat hiding under the bookcase watching me do this podcast. So yes, cats for the win.
So you have a little bit of an audience going on.
I mean, yeah, kind of. She's very unhappy with the fact that I'm here at the moment, I think. So I wouldn't say she's a happy audience.
Last gig or show you watched?
Oh gosh. So my boyfriend and I did a virtual Glastonbury over lockdown over the summer last year. So when the BBC were playing all of the Glastonbury stuff, then we had a tent out in the garden and we strung fairy lights from it, and we both got dressed up and had sparkles on our faces, and oh, it was fabulous. And we spent the whole day and the whole night doing that. So even though it wasn't a real gig, I think that's the last nearest thing that I saw.
That's awesome. And I think I do remember this last year because on my Instagram feed, I think there was a trend in people doing that.
Mm.
We started
it.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I believe you. I 100% believe you. Such a trendsetter. Bit of a weird question.
Okay.
I don't know how you're going to answer this one, but why are giraffes tall?
Because the best, juiciest leaves are always at the top nearest the sun.
And that's a fact.
Science fact. There you go.
That's science. You learn SEO and nature facts on SEO SES.
Is there a correct answer to that?
No, it wasn't. It was one of those stupid questions. Excellent. That I thought I'd just throw in there.
Wonderful.
Name a guilty pleasure.
Oh, gosh. A guilty pleasure. Super noodles.
Oh my gosh.
So at one point in my career, I worked over in Canada for a while, and it was the first time in a long time that I'd lived by myself.
Right.
And most evenings I ate super noodles, to the extent that one of my colleagues eventually said to me, you don't seem to be eating very well, maybe try something else. So yeah, there's still a little bit of a guilty pleasure, and yeah, probably not the healthiest thing.
I love the fact that you had a super noodles intervention with your friend.
Oh my gosh, it was so important that it happened, though. It was literally every day.
To be fair, when I'm hungover, there's nothing better than chicken flavoured super noodles.
So
and
good.
I was over the moon when I found out that they were vegan.
Yes.
I mean, it just goes to show you how much crap into them.
I only learned that this week as well, which I think is why it came into my head, because I hadn't had them for a couple of years, and then I just googled it yesterday and found out that they were. So I had some yesterday and it was they're still just as good.
Well, maybe we need to sort of keep each other updated, you know what I mean? Whenever we find out a food that is vegan, like I think I recently found out, is it something like Jammy Dodgers, I think they're vegan or something.
Things like
Oreos.
Yes.
Oreos are.
I think
I love it.
Beef pot noodle as well might be vegan, which is really weird. A lot of things where you're like, that's got the flavour of meat in it, but it is vegan.
There you just have to ignore all those E numbers that they're pumping.
Yeah.
It's fine. LinkedIn or Twitter?
Different ones for different things. I probably I spend more of my time on Twitter.
Yes, and I would say the same. And for me, I feel like I spend my Twitter has a really solid, welcoming, strong SEO community. So yes, I would agree. I would 100% agree with that. Last two questions. Would you rather be able to read people's minds or talk to animals?
Talk to animals.
No hesitation there.
No hesitation. I'd love to be able to talk to this little kitten that's staring at me right now and find out how she's feeling and what I can do to make her feel better. Whereas I feel that with most people, I'm quite fortunate in that my friend circles in particular, they just say what's on their mind anyway. So I don't think I'd learn anything new.
Fair enough. Last question. In your opinion, what is overrated?
Oh, gosh. What is overrated? Lockdown.
I mean,
being on the ground. What is overrated? I don't know. I guess one of the things for me that I have reflected on a lot during lockdown is that my personal time outside of work is full to bursting with activities. And I've got friends and family members who say to me, why don't you just have a weekend of nothing? Why don't you just do nothing? And you know what? I've done a year's worth and I don't love it. I'm very excited to get back to filling my weekends with time. So yeah, I think the thing that's overrated is having nothing to do.
Ah, interesting. Very interesting. Well, you have survived my quick fire round of questions.
Phew.
I don't think they were too hard, too taxing.
I liked it. I enjoyed it. And I learned a lot about giraffes.
And so has everyone else. Awesome. Right. It's now time that we move into the main section of this podcast. Yes, we are talking about tying digital PR more closely to SEO. So before we get into that, can you give me and our audience a brief overview of yourself, how you got into digital marketing and ended up being head of digital PR at Impression?
Of course, no problem at all. So, I guess it all started for me when through kind of school and college and then into university, I was always very passionate about writing and also really enjoyed kind of seeing what makes people tick. So I studied social psychology at university and I was just really interested in how communities work and how societies are built and how people interact. And from there, my first ambition was to become a journalist. So having finished university, I went and did some work for a local newspaper and I did enjoy a lot of it. But at the time, this was, 12 or 13 years ago, the industry was really struggling. It was really kind of having to deal with that transition period from print journalism to online, which nobody had quite got right yet. And I think that's still true today. But the reality of the situation for anybody looking to go into that field was that it just wasn't a sustainable career. It wasn't something that was going to be able to help me fund and support my skydiving habit either. So it kind of felt like a little bit of a non-starter. But when I was at the newspaper, one of my colleagues said to me, why don't you try PR? And I thought, okay, I've never thought about that, but I'll go and give it a go. So off I went. I worked for a very small company. It was just me and one other lady doing some traditional PR for homes and interiors clients. So I was kind of doing everything from literally cutting up bits of fabric and sticking them in the post to send to journalists as new samples to doing clippings to ringing people up and trying to sell in our stories. So I had a little bit of time doing that and then started doing PR for a user experience agency. And it was while I was there that I spotted this thing called SEO. And I remember going to my boss and saying, I've heard about SEO. It sounds quite interesting. And because the UX agency was building websites and working with some quite nice brands at the time, he was really interested in how that service offering could maybe be integrated into what they were already doing. So he was very trusting of me. And he just kind of said, sure, go and learn about it and let me know what you think. So that was really where my SEO career started, was going to free events that were on in the area, reading a lot of blogs, doing a lot of kind of Googling and YouTubing, and just learning through trial and error, really. So that was really where I kind of honed my craft in the early days. And from then I went on to work brand side, doing digital marketing, and then came back agency side. And I've been working at Impression for about 6 years now. So since 2015, I originally started with a job that was kind of half and half. So part of it was marketing the agency itself, which was great because it meant that I was able to call on a lot of the skills that I'd learned brand side and use a variety of digital and non-digital techniques, which was cool. And on the other side, I was doing SEO for our clients. And really over time, as SEO continued to develop and evolve, we saw that I had colleagues at Impression who were much more technically focused and, to be fair, a lot better at the technical side than me, whereas I was always more kind of content and links. And that was where the digital PR thing came from, really, for me, was that I saw this move in the industry to people kind of using more traditional PR techniques to get more links and get more coverage. I was really aware that this industry had a potential to grow and had this specialism behind it that really intrigued me. It was about 3 years ago that I put together a business case for Tom and Aaron, who are the two founders of Impression, and said, I really think this is something that we should do as a standalone thing. And I've been growing that team ever since. So, yeah, that's my story.
Ah, that's a lovely story. Lovely, lovely story. I always find it fascinating asking people how they got into SEO because it's not really... Everyone that I've sort of spoke to, it's not really been part of the plan. It's sort of like happened, or they stumbled across it, and then the rest is history. So I love asking that question because I just find it like, yeah, it's awesome how people get into it. Yes, I said earlier that today we're going to talk about tying digital PR more closely to SEO. Mm-hmm. And I think you've already sort of answered my first question, because my first question was going to be, let's start with the basics. Mm-hmm. What is digital PR? So you've earlier said that it's about using traditional PR to get more links. Mm. Is that, I know that's like a quite, digital PR is a wide thing, but I don't know, is there anything else that you would say that digital PR is, or is that a nice way that you'd like to explain it?
I think that's one way. I think maybe a better definition is that it describes the use of tactics that create newsworthy content, and that is often done to build links. But I think there's also a recognition in the industry, and certainly for me with my team, that there are broader benefits to investing in digital PR as well. You can build links in much simpler and much cheaper ways than investing in a big digital PR campaign. But actually the KPIs that you can affect and the goals that you can achieve through digital PR are much broader as well. But yeah, it's usually to build links by creating news.
Yeah, and sort of links, backlinks is always going to be, well, I say always, we don't know what Google has up their sleeves, because they keep a lot to themselves, don't they? But for however long I've been in it, like, links have always been sort of like the bread and butter of SEO. So it's just sort of how you get them, and it has changed, hasn't it?
And I think what digital PR kind of recognises as well, though, sorry to interrupt you there, but what it also recognises is that it's not just about what appeases Google anymore. And Google's ambition, as I see it, has always been to emulate the human experience and use what it can do through its machine learning and through its algorithms to mirror what we as human beings are doing when we consider the quality and relevance of a website that we are looking at. So I think it's about kind of playing to Google's algorithms to an extent. But what digital PR does is recognize that it's not just about links for Google, but it's about coverage, it's about opening conversations and doing things to engage users as well, which is really where it goes a step beyond the kind of old school link building techniques that we will have used kind of a decade ago.
Yes, definitely. And I think nowadays there's so much that you can do to prove to Google, do you know what I mean? That you're a worthwhile website or page to sort of like get shown for related terms in search results. But like you say, like it has evolved, and digital PR does a lot more than just link building. And it sort of like builds trust. It helps with like brand awareness. It gets because Google uses a lot of different things rather than that. It's not just backlinks. They use lots in their algorithm, don't they, when they're looking at pages and websites and stuff. So yes, I mean, yeah, that's an interesting discussion in itself, isn't it? However, I am mindful that we are talking about a specific topic today. So when we think of digital PR and SEO, and if you feel like you need to disagree, then please do. But generally speaking, we think of them being sort of like separate methods of marketing, don't we? So, I mean, firstly, do you agree? And secondly, why? If you do agree, why is that?
Yeah, so I do agree. And the reason, in short, is that I believe digital PR needs to be recognised for the specialism that it is. So one of the reasons that I put forward my case at Impression to differentiate the digital PR offering from the SEO is that the specialist skills required in order to do digital PR well, it is not just something that you can kind of pick up as part of a wider SEO strategy. I think it really does warrant its own separate specialism. And there are people who really excel in this field because they've got quite a unique blend of detailed SEO knowledge, but also very kind of good news acumen and abilities within traditional PR. So I think it's fair to say that it should be recognised as a separate specialism, and for it to be delivered by separate teams, to me, makes a lot more sense. I think from the perspective of somebody who's overseeing a whole marketing strategy, though, it's also really important to see how the two kind of play off one another as well. So I think, you know, the whole idea of using PR as a link building strategy is one that has been proven over recent years to be a hugely valuable tactic to use. So I think marketers definitely need to see it as part of the bigger mix. I also think, definitely, while seeing it as a separate specialism is key, you can get even more value when you can combine it with your other goals. And that might be to take more of an SEO driven approach to it, but also to look at how digital PR campaigns and the content that we produce and the audiences that we engage can help to deliver against broader business goals as well.
Okay, so I think my next question, I think you've sort of like touched on some points, but when you are bringing digital PR and SEO together, what benefits are we talking about?
Of course. So I think bringing them together, the main real thing to make sure that you're getting as much value out of that partnership, I suppose, is really to make sure that there are very clear goals and that those goals are aligned. So in some cases, we've had clients kind of come to us, and I'm sure other listeners have had this experience, where the brief to the digital PR team is purely, we need some links. And whilst that's fair enough, it really doesn't go deep enough into what information you need in order to get the maximum value out of that investment. So something that I always do and kind of push back on our clients and also on our SEO team is, take that brief a bit further. Let's look at what we are trying to affect. And that could be as simple as saying, look, these are the areas of the site that are currently lacking in links compared to their competitors. So we need links into these areas. It might be that there are certain keywords that we're trying to affect. It might even be that there are certain areas of the audience that we're trying to mobilize. So, for example, a new location or a new demographic that, you know, that kind of goes slightly beyond SEO. But I think having that more clarity in the brief enables you to deliver more value. And also something that I talk about quite a lot at Impression is this idea of picking the battles that we can win. So in a lot of cases, especially if you're working with bigger brands, and as I'm sure you'll know from kind of Holland and Barrett and things like that, you can be going up against some huge, huge players where you know that the quantity of links and even the quality as well these days is so far beyond where you are right now that in order to be competitive, you're going to have to be investing for years and years, which of course is all part of the game. But if you can identify a certain keyword or category of keywords or area of the site where you know that those competitors have actually got less strength, you can pick those and you can start to kind of gain your visibility by picking those weaker areas and building those up as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so it's about being smarter, isn't it?
Definitely.
So knowing who you're going up against. Yep. And like you say, if it's a bit unrealistic or it's going to take a while, that there's always quick wins, isn't there?
Yeah.
There's always, or thinking a bit outside the box.
Definitely.
So yeah, I really like that advice. Okay, what obstacles come about when that stop digital PR and SEO like working together?
Oh gosh, good question. So I think one of them, and this is going to sound quite contradictory to what I just said, because I think you need very clear briefs. But
yes,
I also think your brief can be too strict. So, for example, let's say that somebody listening to this podcast right now thinks, oh, brilliant, I love that advice that Laura's just given about having a really clear brief. So they now go to their digital PR team and they say, right, I really need you to build links to this particular page, which is about red shoes in a size 7 with a 4-inch heel, and you must absolutely get links into that specific page. It can't be into the red shoes page or into the shoes category or even into the clothing area. It absolutely must be that specific page.
Yeah.
That would be just lovely if we were able to do that. And there's certainly some cases where you can deliver digital PR campaigns which have got that specificity of targeting. And, you know, maybe you do something really creative with red size 7 shoes with a certain heel and you do some kind of stunt, or I don't know. But I guess my point is that the ability of a digital PR team to drive links into a product page is much, much lower than the ability to drive links more into that general region of the site. And the reason for that comes not from a lack of ability on our part, but if you look at how the media has evolved, the requirement for journalists and for news publications and news outlets to be able to monetize their content is growing all the time. And we're seeing that even over the past couple of weeks, there's been some news coming out of various outlets about how they're looking to either save money or develop bigger audiences to make more money. So if you're approaching a journalist and saying, I want you to put a link into this very specific product page on my client's site, they're quite rightly going to look at that and think, it's more like an advert. Let's call it advertorial. Let's put some spend behind this. And, you know, that in itself means that you've got to be paying for it. Of course, in Google's kind of strictest sense of its guidelines, there would need to be a nofollow appended to that. But also the journalist might look at passing the link through affiliate networks and you lose some value. So I think the monetization of the press makes delivery of links into a specific product page very, very difficult. Sorry, go on.
As you're talking, like a question just popped up into my head, and I suppose this depends on the campaign or what you're doing, but I suppose there is an argument there that like sometimes it's better to sort of create a page that's specific for the campaign that's less salesy.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, as SEOs, and as we've spoken about, I've got experience as an SEO as well. So I completely empathize with the requirements there. And we should always be looking at how we can pass the most link equity into the pages that need it. And of course, nobody's ever going to argue that a direct link, maybe with some nice anchor text, directly into that product page that needs a boost is always going to be the absolute ideal if we can achieve it. And like I say, there are ways to do it, but it's much more rare. Whereas if you can think strategically about the passage of that link equity and perhaps think about how you can maybe house the content of your digital PR campaign in the same folder structure as that product. So we've done it where there was one client where we were supposed to be affecting rankings for kids beds. So we housed a lot of our PR content within the kids beds folder. There are other arguments where, you know, for many reasons, maybe the content needs to be placed in a blog, which might feel a little bit removed, but through the use of internal links, we can still pass that link equity. So it's about recognizing where you want the eventual value of the links to end up, but also noting that you can't necessarily go directly there. So being strategic in the placement of your content. And also something that we use at Impression, we call it the circles of focus framework. So if you picture kind of an archery target where you've got the bullseye in the middle, that would be your product page links. That would be your times when you get to speak specifically about what you sell. But if you think about those kind of concentric circles around the outside, each one takes us, you know, a step or two away. So if we use the red shoes example, the bullseye might be links relating to red shoes with a size 7 and a 3-inch heel, but the kind of steps, two or three steps away, might be shoes in general or fashion or... You know, you have to think a bit wider than that. And that's where you can allow your campaigns to have a bit more mass appeal, probably get more links as a result, and then use your SEO nous to channel the link equity through to where it's needed.
Thinking about your structure then, I suppose there's nothing stopping. So say you've got an article or a blog that would, I don't know, you just think, that makes most sense sitting in the blog section, but there's nothing stopping you. And I suppose it depends what flexibility you have within your website, but there's nothing stopping you putting like an article or your page or your content within, like you say, within the category that you're hoping to like build links to.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
If it makes sense, yeah, and if it makes sense for the user experience and it makes sense for the website hierarchy, then absolutely, that's a great way to do it. But also, the value of internal links can't be ignored. So even if it is in the blog, you can still pass that equity through.
Definitely. Have you got any other examples that you'd like to share about where you've done some good stuff?
Ooh, good stuff examples. Love this
good
bit.
Stuff.
I feel like you should
good
monetize
stuff.
It as advertorial. yeah, so I think picking up on what we were just talking about specifically there, one example that I would bring to the table of where we've put something in a very strategically advantageous place on the site would be a campaign that we did for our client Harvey Water Softeners. So these guys sell water softeners. The idea is that depending on where you are in the country, your water can be different levels of what they call hardness. So the amount of, kind of magnesium and calcium and those mineral buildups in the water can affect things like how much limescale you get around the home, how chalky the water is, how much it affects your skin and your hair and all these things. And one of the challenges that we were having from an SEO perspective for this client was that whilst they were ranking very highly for the term water softeners, their ability to rank locally in local search results and in the local packs was limited by the fact that they only had one HQ. So we couldn't do kind of local business listings. They had kind of dealerships and stuff around the country that would often occupy that. But there was still, because your water softness is dictated by where you live, there was still an abundance of people searching for things like water hardness in Reading or water hardness in Nottingham or wherever. So we wanted to find a way that was going to be a valid way for us to create content specific to locations without going down the route of, you know, your doorway pages and just trying to optimize something when we had no business location. And we didn't want to do anything dodgy, basically, but we wanted to provide that experience that users were looking for. So we put together our water hardness tool, or we called it our UK hard water index. So there's an area of the Harvey Water Softener site which sits within the water softener page where you can go on and you put in your postcode or you put in your town or your village or whatever it might be, and it will bring up lots of information about the hardness within your area. And it will tell you how many parts per million you have, which is the measure of hardness. It will also give you tips and advice on what that's going to do to your home and your health and your skin and your hair and all that kind of stuff. And what that has enabled us to do is, on the SEO side, because the content for every location is unique, it means that each one of those pages was already starting to rank for those quite long tail searches that there were still quite decent numbers of searches for. So the content was starting to rank already. And then off the back of us doing lots of PR style promotion of that content. So, you know, the fact it's the UK Hard Water Index means that we've done it the past couple of years at the beginning of the year where we, you know, we reveal the hardness of the water around the country and all that kind of lovely stuff. And we refer to it quite a lot in our other campaigns as well. So we've built a lot of links to that area. And that to me is a really lovely example of how you can use digital PR not just to gain links into a site in general, but also to start ranking for some very specific keywords, to enhance the user experience. And further down the line, something that we're planning to add in is a form of audience capture as well. So as it stands, we're already using cookies to be able to capture the data of people visiting specific locations, which means that we can do some nice retargeting through paid media as well. But we're also going to incorporate an email capture where people can download more reports. We're going to encourage more social share. So really using that tool as an audience growth tool as well. For me, that's something that makes it a really lovely example.
That is a lovely, lovely example. And it just shows how like wonderful it is when you do bring digital PR and SEO together. And I feel like that's a nice like end to this section, because look at the time.
Spot on.
It's flying. And I feel like we could talk. I mean, there's loads more questions that I would love to ask you. but unfortunately, we just don't have the time. But hey, we'll just have to get you back in the future. Awesome. Right. Are you ready for a feature?
No. I've heard your podcast too many times. I'm scared.
You need a bit of fighting talk. You'd be like, yes, I'm ready.
I'm ready. Let's do it. Yes.
Okay, so there is a tenuous link to the feature about what we've been speaking about. The Guardian posted they did a quiz where you had to pick out which were fake or real headlines. So I've picked a few out and I'm just going to test your, I don't know, how well you can pick out a fake news heading compared to a real one. I mean, I did it myself and I did awfully.
Excellent.
But does that make sense?
It does. I've played this game before with my team and it's really, really tricky, so I'm even more scared.
Okay. Well, I'm sure you've had previous training,
It sounds like I'm gonna be good at it because I've done it before. The reason I brought that up is that I know how difficult it is. Okay, let's do it.
Okay. First one, is this fake or real? Teenager fined £100 for feeding a chip to a pigeon.
Oh, gosh. I mean, is this from The Guardian? I know the quiz is from The Guardian, but is the headline in The Guardian?
Oh, I don't know. Okay, we don't know that. But I feel like that's knowledge that you're going to use to your advantage, so I'm not going to give you that.
I'm trying to think. I feel like it could probably be something that's picked up by a very, very local news publication.
What, on a slow news day?
Yeah. One of the techniques that I was taught by my colleague, Joe, who used to work in the regional press, is that you should be kind of trawling through Facebook, like community pages, like village and town pages. And I've been doing that a lot more. And I have seen people make complaints about people feeding chips to pigeons. So I'm going to go real.
You're correct.
No. Oh.
I mean, starting strong. First one in the bag. Number two. Mm-hmm. Two-headed sharks found.
Two-headed sharks. I don't know. I don't think this is true. And the reason that I say that is that my boyfriend is on furlough at the moment and he is providing me with a constant stream of weird and wonderful news every day because that's what he spends his time doing. I feel like he would have highlighted the two-headed shark. So no, that's false.
And I mean, that's stuff of nightmares if there are two-headed exactly. sharks. I mean, one-headed sharks are terrifying enough. You're correct. Oh. That was a fake one. I feel like you're going to do well. I should have made these harder.
You can finish now if you like.
No. We've got some more, Laura. You can't do that. Police in Germany rescue man chased by a baby squirrel. I love this one.
Oh, I was going to go false, but I feel like your love of it suggests that you've read the full story or you've seen the video.
Oh, no, the headline. I should have said I love the headline.
You've seen a video or something. I'm going to have to go true on that basis.
Damn it. You're right. I mean, I want to know what the man did to the squirrel.
I want to know why he's so scared of a baby squirrel.
Well, people have phobias, don't they? So unless he had like a squirrel phobia, because you get weird and wonderful phobias out there.
Do you know what, though? This is a little anecdote from my life. So fun fact about me is that I was once bitten by a monkey. Yeah, so I have a huge scar on my leg, which I later accompanied with a massive tattoo. But yeah, so I was bitten by a monkey. So I can kind of understand if you're being chased by a wild animal, my advice would be run away, because that's not what I did. And now I'm scarred.
Can I just, this is very unprofessional, but can you hear an alarm going?
I can. Is that the doorbell?
One moment, please. Right, I'm back.
Hiya.
I have to, basically, I have alarms to remind myself to do everything in my life. Yeah. So that's a bit embarrassing and not very professional, is it?
I love it. So please don't edit that out. That was wonderful. Like, it's just lockdown life.
It's probably something daft like remember to eat lunch or remember to breathe or something ridiculous like that. Remember to go for your walk, get outside. Anyway, moving on, swiftly moving on. Canadian zoo fined after taking bear out for ice cream. I mean, can you just picture that? Oh, a bear took it into a mint choc chip.
I cannot. And also, I lived in Canada and I know how seriously they take bears. So no, I don't think they took a bear out for ice cream.
You've got one wrong.
No. Oh, all of Canada has let me down.
I just love that one.
Surely that's craziness.
Well, my sources say it's true. Elderly woman trains 65 cats to steal from her neighbours. I couldn't even make it through that one.
I so want that to be true. I want to know there's a potential to train cats to do that.
65.
No, not true.
Oh, yes, you're back on. Yay. You're back on it. Okay. Camel survives after losing half its body.
Oh.
You've got to think about this, because worms.
Which part?
Well, yes. And also, I was thinking, like, you know, if you chop a. Obviously, don't condone chopping worms in half. Please don't.
But they do carry on, don't they?
Yeah. If a poor worm gets cut in half, they carry on. But then I don't know. A worm compared to a camel.
Also,
what are you saying?
Losing half its body sounds incredibly careless. How do you lose half your body? I think the only way to survive it would be if it was done intentionally as part of an operation. And I think what vet in their right mind is looking at a camel that needs half its body removing and thinking this is a life we need to extend. So, no, not true.
Correct.
Yes. Science logic.
You might. You might be onto, yes, I loved your logic, very, very logical. But so far, you've only got one wrong out of six.
Which one did I get wrong?
They're like the ice cream with the bear.
Canada.
Right, last two. Okay. And I will say, we have had one guest who got 100% once.
Oh, I might as well give up then.
No, definitely.
I feel like I came into this really positive, but I've ended up incredibly competitive. Now I'm angry.
Right, last two. Skittles used instead of salt to help clear ice and snow from roads in Canada.
Instead of salt?
Skittles.
Why would they not have salt in Canada, though?
To give you, I don't know if this is going to help or not, but I have heard that, I think somewhere they were like, this isn't in Canada, but they were like, they were doing a film and the roads were too, it was like somewhere in like Italy, I think, where the roads were quite small and spindly. And it was like, they put Pepsi on the roads to make it stickier. So there was less likely to be an accident. And that's true.
I feel like you're trying to lead me down an incorrect path.
I'm just giving you information. You can do with what you want.
I don't know. I feel like I've got my work brain back on, and I'm like, the ROI of those Skittles is going to be minimal, isn't it? Because the cost is going to be high. I think, no, that's not true. Salt must be cheaper. So, yeah, no, not true.
Oh, you're right.
Yes.
There's no getting past you, is there?
Well tried, unless it's,
unless it's bears with ice cream.
Oh, those bears.
Last one. Okay. I don't know how I'm going to get through this one. Criminal farts so loudly he gives away his hiding place.
That would have to be incredibly loud. Like, if you're, I'm so logical. No, I feel like if you're within hearing distance of a fart, even if it's the loudest fart in the world, you're already in the room with the criminal, so you've already found them. So no, I don't think that's true.
Oh, you got this one wrong. This has happened.
Oh, farts and bears are not my thing.
I bet you didn't think you'd ever say that sentence.
I'm learning so much about myself this morning.
I'm glad I've been part of this journey. I'm very sad to say this, but it's an end of this week's SEO SAS podcast. And I'm very sad because I feel like we could just chat
for
hours, but you know,
we should just stop recording and just carry on. We'll play more of the headline game.
Sounds wonderful. So thank you very much for joining me, and I think this is a corker of an episode. For getting serious, I think what we covered is going to be really good for our audience, and it's going to, like, light bulb moments are going to be going off for people. So thank you very much.
It's my pleasure.
If people want to get in touch with you, find out what you're doing or anything like that, where can they find you?
So the best place is probably Twitter, where I am at Laura L. Hampton. So that's where I share a lot of the tips and advice from my team and a lot of the campaigns that we work on. And I also make a thing of sharing content from other agencies and other people too. So hopefully there's lots of inspiration on there. You can also find me on LinkedIn, just Laura Hampton on LinkedIn. And of course, through the Impression website, which is impression.co.uk.
Wonderful. If you would like to get in touch with SEO SAS, we are also on Twitter. We are SEO_SAS. I am personally on Twitter, Sarah MCDUK. And for those quick people, yes, that does spell out Sarah McDuck. And I'm also on LinkedIn. We have an email address, hello@SEOSASpodcast.com. I think that's all the ways. So if you want to put yourself forward and be a guest like Laura has, then please do. If you just want to say hi or suggest a topic, then we're all ears as well. And then the only last thing to say is, if you do enjoy and listen to our podcast and not yet subscribe, what are you doing? No, I'm joking. If you would like to subscribe, then that would be awesome for us. And also, you will get notifications of when new episodes are ready for you to listen to. I have had a wonderful time. Laura, have you?
I have. It's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Lovely to hear. So, guys, there's nothing left for me and Laura to do but say goodbye and stay safe.